This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. At least 80, and some are estimating as many as 90 people have died in a horrific car bomb in the Afghan capital, Kabul, this week. The bombing, which left a 13-foot crater, took place near the so-called Green Zone, where international embassies and foreign workers are concentrated. The German embassy suffered the most damage. The bombing was close enough to the presidential palace that it shattered the palace windows. Afghan President Ashraf Ghani called the attack a, quote, crime against humanity. According to news reports, most of the bomb's victims were ordinary Afghans on their way to work. The Taliban has said it was not responsible. This was one of the deadliest attacks in Afghanistan over the course of the nearly 16-year-long war. In 2015, a similar attack took place in another Kabul neighborhood when a bomb in a truck detonated, killing a number of people and injuring hundreds. My guest is Douglas Wissing. He is the author of Hopeless but Optimistic: Journeying Through America's Endless War in Afghanistan. His earlier book was called Funding the Enemy: How U.S. Taxpayers Bankrolled the Taliban. His writings have appeared in the Washington Post, the New York Times, LA Times, and Foreign Policy. Welcome to the program, Douglas.
Thank you. It's good to talk to you again.
So this particular attack came at a time when the U.S. was considering sending more troops into Afghanistan. It came after a few months after the U.S. dropped the so-called mother of all bombs on Afghanistan. Before we get into that broader U.S. context, let's talk about the attack itself. How does this figure within the 16 years of violent war that Afghans have suffered? It's one of the deadliest attacks, but certainly not the deadliest, and certainly not the only deadly attack.
Yeah, I mean, what we're seeing is that the Taliban-led insurgency is controlling more and more of the country. Analysts, the conservative estimates are now it's about 50% of the country. Some analysts are saying that the Taliban is influencing as much as 90%, and influencing means that it's a very insecure environment. And insurgencies of this nature are centripetal. They move from the countryside toward the government centers. And of course, we're seeing more and more government centers becoming insecure, really over a good part of the country. And more attacks in Kabul, which is, I can testify, is a very dangerous place and is increasingly insecure. So we have seen major attacks in 2017. There was an attack on a military hospital in March where over 100 were killed, the equivalent of the Walter Reed Hospital in America. It was the major military hospital in Kabul. We had an attack earlier in May that was right at the gates of the U.S. Embassy, where 8 people were killed in an attack on a military convoy, a NATO convoy. And then, of course, we had this horrific attack today, yesterday, where now the estimates are that over 100 have been killed. The Afghan news agencies are reporting over 100 have been killed. They're still digging people out, and over 600 wounded.
So, Douglas, let's also talk a little bit about the fact that this particular attack took place near the Green Zone. It has, and I mentioned it, shattered the windows of the presidential palace. So we're talking about a bomb in a very significant part of the country and the capital, where foreign aid workers are concentrated. It's also sort of symbolically the most, you know, it's the most tangible symbol of foreign invasion and interference in Afghanistan, right?
Yeah, it's very clear evidence that the Afghan security forces can't even control the most sensitive part of the capital city. That bomb went off about 300 meters from the U.S. Embassy, which is increasingly a besieged fortress. It was right in the heart of the Foreign Embassy Quarter. That's a pretty posh neighborhood in Kabul. That truck bomb, that tanker bomb, was carrying, according to reports, about 3,300 pounds of high explosives. It went off in an area where they would have had to have gone through 2 to 5 checkpoints. There's a number of roads that come into that square. Whatever way you came in, they had to negotiate 2 to 5 security checkpoints. So it underlines that the term that is bandied around by the publicists is that Kabul is protected by a ring of steel. Well, it's a pretty porous ring of steel. There are many reports of extensive infiltration into the Afghan government security forces by the insurgents. This most likely speaks to this, as it did with the hospital attack earlier in the spring. The Afghan security forces, they're led by corrupt commanders. The reports are about 20% of the soldiers and policemen on the rolls are actually ghost soldiers and policemen. They exist only on the payrolls.
And this has been a problem that Afghanistan has dealt with right from the very moment that the U.S. Removed the Taliban from power in the early days of this long war. Now, the people who were killed, I mentioned a majority of them were civilians simply on their way to work. Many of them were likely people who worked at the embassies, Afghans who work at the embassies. The BBC is reporting that one of its employees was killed. Another person from Tolo TV, which is a local Afghan network, was killed. You know, we hear about the impact of terrorist attacks in European cities with great humanity, but we don't often have that same lens applied to the brown-skinned victims of similar attacks in countries like Afghanistan, do we?
I agree with you completely. Last year, the UN reported that 12,000 Afghan civilians were killed in combat-related incidents, including 983 children. Enormous numbers of civilian casualties. And of course, here in the 16th year of the war, there are tens of thousands of Afghan combatants who were casualties. So the toll on Afghanistan is staggering.
Right. So the Trump administration has been considering increasing the number of troops to Afghanistan, 5,000 more troops. This is something that presidents, you know, George W. Bush really was the first person who started the war. But after him, when President Obama came in, he tried to increase troops as a way to end the war. That didn't work. Now Trump is trying to do this or is considering taking the recommendation of the U.S. general on the ground by considering increasing 5,000 more troops. Canada is saying, in light of this attack this week with 80 people, you've said over 100 people killed, that Canada should consider sort of increasing its presence in Afghanistan. What do you make of this solution by the West?
Well, the argument, there are a couple of parts to the argument. One is the proponents of an increase are stating that it's a stalemate, and it's not really a stalemate. It's a lost war. The Taliban-led insurgency is controlling a larger and larger part of the country. The proponents of the escalation say that we made this enormous investment without explaining how 5,000 more soldiers are going to change things when 100,000 didn't. We had 100,000 U.S. soldiers during the Obama administration. We have about still 10,000 in Afghanistan. They say that we're going to force the insurgents to the negotiating table. The Taliban didn't go to the negotiating table when there were 100,000 American soldiers and about 140,000 coalition soldiers there, when they only controlled 7% or so of the countryside. They didn't negotiate then. They understood then, as they understand now, they don't need to go to the negotiating table. They're winning. They need to be patient, as they have been before. The long-held adage of the Taliban commanders is that while the Americans may have the watches, we have the time.
Well, the Taliban has said that they were not responsible for the attack this week. What do you make of that? I mean, generally, when they have been behind such attacks, they have wanted to take credit for them, right?
Well, the report from the Afghan Intelligence Service, the NDS, is that the Haqqani Network, which is a Taliban-allied insurgency group that goes all the way back to the Soviet War, the Haqqanis used to be allied with the CIA and the U.S. secret war against the Soviets. That's how the Haqqanis got going. And they operate generally in eastern Afghanistan and in the Pakistani regions. And that's pretty close to Kabul, really. And they're the ones that have been responsible for a lot of attacks in Kabul. They have a deep network there. And that is who's being reported. They're capable of very complicated operations and complex attacks, which this does have the earmarks of the Haqqani network. Another of the Afghan news services, Kama, reported not very long ago that President Ghani has ordered the execution of 11 Haqqani and Taliban prisoners that may include one of the sons of one of the Haqqani leaders.
So it's possible that this might have been the sort of reason for the bomb attack, although certainly it's early, too early to get details. What about...
President Ghani ordered that after the attack.
I see. So what at this point, what impact do you think this attack will have on security in the green zone? What would, will it have any impact on Afghan security forces themselves? Or is this just business as usual in Afghanistan, that these incidents just come and go?
These incidents come and go. I have been in guest houses in Kabul, and there'll be a pretty massive blast. And if you ask, they'll say, it is normal, sir. Mm-hmm. So it is the way, it's the mode now. The insurgency is knocking on the door of the capital city.
What about the bomb that the U.S. had dropped on Afghanistan, particularly apparently aimed at a target of the Islamic State? Could that have had any impact on this? Could the Islamic State be involved?
Well, the Islamic State is typically not capable of an attack of this complexity. They do take credit for things, but for instance, with the hospital attack, the Islamic State did take credit for that. And many people thought that it was a level of complexity they were not capable of, and they thought perhaps the Haqqani network was helping them out. I don't know, obviously. The attack on the NATO convoy that ISIS or the Islamic State did take credit for that, and that was the kind of attack, it was a car bomb, that kind of one-off thing they are capable of. We can say about Moab that as we know, the Taliban and the Afghan wing of ISIS don't get along, and they actually fight, and the Taliban had been reducing ISIS numbers in Afghanistan. After they dropped the Moab bomb, the Taliban came out in support of ISIS, saying that the United States was using Afghanistan to test weapons, as they had done with drone warfare. So in that particular case, we took two adversaries and melded them together against ourselves.
By the way, the news media like Al Jazeera in particular are reporting right now as you and I speak that the Afghan government is blaming Pakistan and the Haqqani network for the bombing. And we know that the Pakistani government has had long ties to the Taliban, and you can sort of link the birth of the Taliban to Pakistan's intelligence services a couple of decades ago. But this also seems to be part of the pattern where you've had the sort of war of words between Pakistan and Afghanistan every time there is a deadly attack in Afghanistan, right?
Yes, and the Haqqani network does have long ties with the ISI, with the Pakistani intelligence service, as they did, which goes back again to the CIA-US war where they were involved with the Pakistanis to fight that war against the Soviets.
Well, Douglas, finally, what do you expect the Trump administration is going to do about Afghanistan in light of the attack this week? You know, the Trump administration seems eager to expand its wars, even though during his presidential campaign, Trump criticized President Obama's hawkish responses to the so-called war on terror. But when one is in the hot seat oneself, the pressure from the Pentagon and others to simply keep our wars going endlessly is pretty strong.
I think you summarized it. We don't know what President Trump's response will be. He is a businessman, and there is that old sunk cost bias thing where a smart businessman knows you don't throw good money after bad. He's declared bankruptcy 4 or 6 times. I don't recall which it is. He understands that, but he's also a reactive person. And of course, the generals would like to continue the war and expand it.
Well, Douglas, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. And by the way, the book that you had written, Hopeless But Optimistic, we had interviewed the last time we had an interview with you and covered some of the things that you mentioned in that book. People can watch that interview as well on our website later today. Good luck with all the work that you've done. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sanaa.
My guest is Douglas Wissing. He's the author of Hopeless But Optimistic, Journeying Through America's Endless War in Afghanistan. His earlier book, Funding the Enemy, How U.S. Taxpayers Bankroll the Taliban. His work has appeared in the Washington Post, the New York Times, LA Times, and Foreign Policy. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for a daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.